Welcome to the Veterinary Project Podcast, episode 016.
Welcome to the show created by vets featuring absolutely no pets. This is the Veterinary Project Podcast, hosted by Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Our resident veterinarians have swapped out their stethoscopes in favor of microphones to bring you the Veterinary Project Podcast, a show focused on real conversations, aimed to connect this amazing profession full of remarkable people. Through the sharing of collective stories and wisdom, and connecting over the many unique challenges we face, we invite you to join our community of veterinary professionals leading intentional lives. And now, here are the hosts of the Veterinary Project Podcast, Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light.
Welcome back to the Veterinary Project Podcast. You are joined, as always, by yours truly, Dr. Mikey Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light. Mikey, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. I like that you called me Mikey. That's a nice little change up.
I keep getting harassed by everyone around me because now they know my nickname is Johnny, so I might as well throw it right back.
I've called you Johnny like as long as I can remember. And I know we were on like whatever episode when I finally texted you and was like, do you want me to call you Johnny or should it be Jonathan? And I was like, oh, it's too late now.
Hey, my professional name when I got to be the boss or serious is Jonathan. Otherwise, the Veterinary Project, it's Johnny. So now everybody knows it. It's out. It's too late.
Nice.
Interesting banter. Before we get into the podcast, which is a great episode today with our guest, we got to talk about the banter behind the banter. So there's a U.S. election going on right now. It is not completed. There isn't a decision. And when Mike and I were getting ready for this podcast, we were like, well, what do we talk about today? And I brought up the idea of talking about the election. But then we don't know if what roads we can go down. And so we're having a banter about the election because it's just so divisive. Is that what we want to do? It's just hilarious how bad it's gotten.
Yeah, it's I'm part of a group that meets every Monday night. I'm the only Canadian. The other six guys are all American. And they described it perfectly. They said being up there in Canada, it would be like living in an apartment building and you're living above like a crack shack. That's how they described it. And I was like, yeah, sometimes when we peek in, it's like things are pretty hectic. So, and I mean, who knows? I'm living under a rock during COVID here. So I'm not on the ground. I don't know, but things get very divisive and watching from a distance, it's like, wow, what is going on?
Completely. And whichever way it ends up happening, it doesn't look like, yeah, there's going to be some unhappy people no matter what. And from a Canadian perspective, it's very interesting to watch.
Yeah, it is.
And that's as far as we're going as Canadians right now. We're not going deeper. So before we get into our guest's bio and a little bit about what today's episode is all about, Mike, why don't you walk us through what today's quick tip is?
All right. So today's quick tip, I actually was reminded of it. I got a thank you card today in the mail from Phil and Meredith at the Vet Financial Summit. And it was a very clever thank you card. It has like some dill seeds in it. And it said, thank you so much for planting the seeds of financial success at the VFS Community Summit. And it reminded me, my coach, when I had a personal coach back a few years ago, got me onto writing out 3 thank you cards every Monday morning. And it was like a gratitude practice. It kicks the week off in just such a positive way. I would just write thank you cards to whoever I was thinking of, really. But it kind of reminded me, I fell off that practice, and this has got me thinking I should get back on. So my quick tip for anyone, whether you own a vet clinic or just personally, is to start sending out the handwritten thank you cards in the mail because it's so impactful. Nowadays with technology, social media, everything is texting, email, digital. A handwritten thank you card goes a long way and you feel really good when you're writing them out. So that's the quick tip.
Great quick tip. And I look forward to getting a thank you card from you.
Oh, thank you cards for everyone.
No, that's an awesome one. Thanks for that one, Mike. Well, let's jump into our guest today. A quick brief bio for Kate Simon. Kate graduated from the Northern Alberta Institute of Technology in 2001. She is a veterinary technologist and has worked in emergency and critical care now for 17 years and obtained her VTS in emergency and critical care in 2017. She is a certified recover instructor and provides in-clinic hands-on CPR training to veterinary teams. Kate is currently one of the Alberta representatives to the RVTTC and is an RVT, Registered Veterinary Technologist, on the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association Council. She has a passion to elevate and promote the profession by supporting and instilling confidence in new graduates and people returning to the field. I have had a pleasure in getting to know Kate over the last 3+ years as we've worked together in practice. And on today's episode, we discuss her start in her career from the early days, getting fired, what that looked like, all the way through to getting into a practice where she received the mentorship she needed, dealing with change through multiple ownership transfers within the clinics that she's worked in, taking on management roles. And then we get into some of the details around tech shortages, what a living wage needs to look like, and or why a living wage in a definition is just she doesn't agree with. And further to that, what it looks like in this day and age for techs and where life might look like going forward for them. It's a really interesting discussion. Mike wanted to push points or get some points pushed through for us both together as we have some good bantering back and forth. And we really hope that you enjoy this conversation. So without further ado, please enjoy the conversation with Kate Simon. Kate, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast this afternoon. This one took a little bit of work, and I am really excited to see where this conversation goes. So in getting right into it, why don't you share a little bit about, share with our listeners a little bit about yourself and where Kate finds herself in her career today?
Well, I graduated from NAIT in 2001. From there, I actually had a little bit of a rough start in my veterinary career. I was fired from my first job for being, I was lazy, I was cocky, I liked to play the fake it till you make it game, which isn't, we all know that that's all see-through. At my next job, I was actually quite badly bullied. But I put up with that and I could handle that. But then one day when the veterinarian was poking this dog over and over, I was like, I can't watch this anymore. Can I try? And she said to me, she looked me right in the eye and she said, you can play vet and I'll play tech. And then the next day I wrote probably the longest resignation letter I've ever seen. And I luckily found myself in a good practice, and that's kind of where everything changed for me. I was in a practice where they had excellent management. There was obviously a team dynamic. They really fostered learning, asking questions, kind of built my confidence up a bit. But while working there, I was also I was making like $10 an hour, which at the time was really good, but I was having a hard time living on it like everyone else. So I got a job in ER, and then that's where everything really changed for me. I like opened my eyes, light bulb went off, this chaos happened. These doctors were amazing. I had techs that could mentor me. And then I think for me, the thing I loved there was that I could kind of take some of those successes on for myself. So I really felt I was responsible for helping these animals versus helping someone else. Yep. And then from there, like the practice got sold, and then everyone else quit and I was the only one left. So I kind of fell, the disaster, disorganized person fell into this weird management role. And luckily it's something I stuck with. And that was a small emergency clinic. And over the years, things just started happening. And I kind of got inherited into this huge specialty practice. And that's kind of where I've been since. And then in 2017, I got my VTS in emergency and critical care. And here we are.
Excellent. Well, there is a lot to unpack in that last 2-minute summary right there. And I'm going to take this conversation right back to the start, if I may. You graduated at, I believe it was 19 years of age.
Yep.
And I think you took the fire right out of my writing here for this episode right at the start, because you said you came out, you were cocky, you were faking it till you make it, and didn't really know, you know, what your position, what your job was right off the start there. You mentor now a lot of new grads coming out of school. And as I described to Mike right at the start, we've known each other for a few years. I consider you a super tech. That doesn't happen right away. Tell me about what that felt like and looked like coming out of school.
I was young. I kind of went to school to get my parents off my back. I knew I wanted to work with animals. I knew I didn't want to be a veterinarian. I was kind of looking at like wildlife restoration and stuff like that. But this NAEP program was 2 years, seemed like a good idea. And then when I got out, I was just totally unprepared for the responsibility. And I very much didn't want anyone to know that I didn't know things. Like I thought that there was this expectation that I was ready to, you know, on the floor drive, on my own, do all these things and be confident. So I did fake it till I made it. And I think it was actually lucky that this person fired me when they did, because I think I would have just continued on this road. But that was kind of a smack in the face that I needed.
Did you expect it, or did you think you were that good?
I thought I was good. And you know, in hindsight, she did all the right, I was actually laid off.
Okay.
Because she was too nice to fire me. But I had like write-ups, like I was late all the time, like this, like textbook firing, but she laid me off.
She laid you off. Okay. So she went through the proper steps, and still Kate at 20 years old or 19, even at that point, still was going, hey, I'm the bee's knees and that's that.
I would have fired me for sure. Okay.
Then going into the next role, we talked about this in our pre-recording and, you know, without going into the details, a different situation. Here's where you wanted to gain on your skills. You know, you still thought you were good, but it was a different dynamic. And this is something that, from the standpoint of being in clinics and the small teams that we are, I want to bring this up and I want to be, you know, provide all the discretion you require. So, you know, we don't have to go into too much detail, but you spoke about this in your summary. There is, you were bullied.
Yeah. Like for real. So when people tell me they're bullied, I'm like,
yes.
Not called bullying, but like intimidation, you know, you're not good enough to be here, not letting me do anything. Like I was like scrubbing instruments. I did all the right. And like, I really have a hard time with people that play the victim. I did all the right things. I tried to work it out with her. I went to management. I remember this so clearly. The management told me, you know, she's going through some things. You just got to let it roll off your back, like water off a duck's back kind of thing. So I was like, okay, fine, whatever. And I think I did a really good job, pulled up my socks, kept trying. Then at my review, I had the comment that, you know, you're not taking constructive criticism really well. You know, you're not really listening to what she's saying. And I'm like, I can't win here.
Was that person in a position of power?
It was management. Yeah.
It was management. Manager. Okay. As a tech or as a vet or somebody different?
It was an office manager, not a practice, like not a professional.
Not a professional within the realms of a RVT or a tech, or I mean RVT or a vet. Did you feel at that time that you had the power to, it doesn't sound like you did, to make change to get yourself in a better position within that practice?
I tried really hard, and actually someone else that worked there quit because they didn't like the way that I was being treated. And that I was like, oh, you know, that sucks. Now I'm here by myself. I'm not really good at advocating for myself, I don't think. But then, you know, when this vet,
I totally do not agree with that comment. We'll go to that later. I disagree.
You know, I had no confidence, right? And like, I don't know what good is, and I'm just being told I'm not good. But I do love even though I went into the profession not really understanding what it was, I fell in love with it. Like, I very much have pride for my profession. And then this vet says, like, I'm taking blood. Okay, you can play vet and I'll play tech. And it's like, come on, man, I'm out. Like, just, that's it. You can bully me all day, but that, you can't insult my profession. So I'm out of here.
Correct. And how far into your professional life were you at that time?
That would have been 2 to 3 years.
2 to 3 years. And was there an aha moment for you, Kate, where you're like, I love this. I love what I'm doing and I want to take this further? Or was it a progression? Because it sounds like you were already there by year three.
It was, I like to try new things. So it was like, actually I wanted, so I was like, this isn't working out. I'm not good at it. I hate it. I'm going to be an x-ray tech. So then I went to try and do that. And that was like, I don't like this. I don't have a passion for it. And then I was like, maybe this is what I'm supposed to do.
Okay.
So then it was like, I actually am good at some things. Like maybe I'm not good at this thing that I haven't practiced, but I've got a way with animals. I've got a way with these people. I just feel very natural in this environment. And, you know, I'm taking that for granted. Like that's something I need to grasp onto, right?
Excellent. And then was that a matter of jumping into some different CE, opening up your eyes to different opportunities? And I'm still speaking early in your career because, you know, a lot has happened since.
No, I just felt like I needed to change my situation. I tried to change what I was doing and it didn't work. So I needed a new place. And luckily I'd made some friends along the way that were like, you know, come with us. This is a good place. We need somebody. And I just kind of fell in like super lucky, found this practice, the next practice after that.
Yeah. Yeah. So then looking at it, did you ever think of a time as a tech early in your career, you're still 3 years out, I'm going to leave the profession in entirety?
Yeah, I wanted to be an x-ray tech. Okay. I was upgrading. I didn't take physics in high school, so I had to upgrade. So I was doing that. I had to do a case study report to get into Nate. So I did that. And it just didn't feel like it was cool. I liked it, but it was just like, I didn't feel this isn't my natural environment. Like this is like a lot of people, I think in this industry, it's like, this is just where I am. And it's like, there's no choice for me. I belong here.
Completely. So then stepping to that next clinic, you moved into a different GP practice.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned having mentorship and people in there that wanted to guide you forward. What did that look like to you at that point in your career? And more specifically, what did mentorship look like to you? What were some of those specific tactics that they utilized, whether they knew it or not?
So at that time, I think things have changed even and like over the past 10 years in terms of like tech responsibility, that sort of thing. So at the time, a veterinarian was one of my mentors, like just asking questions, like answering my questions and not making me feel stupid. Like someone said to me the other day, like unasked questions kill patients, right? So like, if I don't feel comfortable and safe and not like you're going to think I'm an idiot, then how is that going to benefit this patient? I'm putting a patient at risk by not asking these questions. And so those questions led to more questions, And
yeah. They were willing to listen. They were willing to guide you. And therefore you learned more.
They answered so many questions.
Excellent. Mike, I'm asking all the questions. Anything that jumps to mind here before I move forward?
No, I'm loving that, like the vulnerability for one, and then just following your journey, like the awareness to make these pivots, and then listening to Jonathan talk about you saying, you know, we have like a superstar tech coming on. So this is my first time hearing all of this backstory. So it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I agree. And very relevant to Kate Simon 2020 version, which in the in-between, you started working at an emergency and picking up some shifts. I asked why that was, and you were really frank about that. It was like to make money. It was a good environment and you were liking it. Tell us a little bit about that, because there's a lot of techs in my experience that I've worked with that are scared of emergency medicine.
I know. I wish it wouldn't be so scary. It is so fun. Like, it's so fun. I mean, I guess I should explain, like to me, general practice is terrifying. Like you want me to anesthetize a healthy animal? Like what if this spay dies? Like that's horrifying to me. But if this GDV comes in and dies.
Yep. It's a hero surgery. Yep. It either does really well or it's going to be euthanized. Unfortunately, that is a hero surgery. Yep.
Right. You can only come out a hero if it lives. Yep. So I just love that. And maybe that's selfish for me, but I'm like, I did this. This is me. I own this. Like so fun. And like, I still like, how cool is a job that like I've placed a catheter, and to me that's still, that's as cool as it was the first time I did it. Like, it's still so satisfying.
So you are in a place when you were at the downtown emergency where you got to start working with specialists. So you're in emergency medicine. You've now moved on from your GP and you're starting to work with specialists. So you're working at the top of the game then.
Yeah.
What does that look like? And how intimidating was that? Or did you have confidence by that time to go, no, I've got this?
Well, I still have a level of cockiness. So I thought I was pretty good when I went there. Cause I was pretty good. I was pretty good.
Say it as it is. I love it.
And then, so I go there and like in Edmonton, there were no specialists. They kind of came from Calgary and hung out here for like a couple days a month. And it like just mind blowing how much those guys know. Right. And it's, and I think the other thing about specialists and emergency medicine is so intimidating. People think they're so smart, and they are, but it's only in that one thing, right? Like, you know way more stuff about vaccines and anesthesia and that sort of thing. Like, I don't do that stuff. I know nothing about it. And it's really important for people to appreciate what they're good at, but also appreciate they're not very good at everything. So that's kind of, you know, these guys are so amazing, but also, you know, you're good at things too.
So how do you take that skill set and that potential lack of confidence that people have into emergency, especially in this day and age where we're short of techs, and we're going to get into that a little bit, and you're bringing a year or two tech into an emergency setting, how do you mentor that individual now to see that? Because they're just looking at that specialty as the all-knowing person.
Well, I think it's just be like, honestly, how good does it feel to have someone saying, I got you, I'm here, do your thing, I got you. And just being supportive, like, you are safe to make mistakes here and I'm going to help you out. I'm not going to let you kill anything, but you need to try it. And I promise anybody that comes into our practice is like, they're, you know, wallflowers. And then we're like, just come on over here. Just do it. No big deal. There's definitely no judgment because, like I say, it's really important to me to make our staff know that, you know, you're amazing at this, but you got to appreciate other people's skills too, because they also add to it. Right. Yep. And it's just, you know, making them feel safe, making sure they aren't going to try and fake it till they make it, because like I say, that's how things die. And just no shame. We can't know everything.
Never are. Now, things implode a little bit. Ownership changes. Some people leave. And somebody needs to take on a management role.
Yeah.
Tell us about that transition. And this is really important, again, because this happens in lots of places. Oh, look it. There's a warm body. You are now the manager.
Right. And so that's kind of how it happened. And I think, honestly, if people knew me, I would be like the worst person, right? Like, I actually was very non-confrontational. I am so disorganized. Like, why me? This is a terrible idea. I'm always screwing around, like not the most professional person to work with, honestly. But I think I was committed. It was a new challenge. Like, right when that happened, I actually was like, okay, I'm done being a tech now. And I forgot to tell you this. I decided I wanted to be an EMT, and I had just finished my emergency medical responder training. So I was kind of like, I'm going to apply to Nate to be an EMT. But then this new ownership came and they paid us more money and here's a cool job. Okay, I'll do this for now. So then that I really liked too. So luckily this opportunity just came upon me. And
excellent. And so another change opportunity, another opportunity to grow. Did you look at it consciously as that, as, hey, I've got another place to grow? It was just like, yeah, this sounds fun and let's stick with it for a bit.
That's, yeah, I'm like a, let's try this. Like, no, like a lot of people are like, I'm out, I'm done, I hate it. But I just feel like, let's give it a chance. Like, what's the worst that could happen? I can always leave. So let's see what this grows into.
Okay.
And like, anytime a practice is bought, like there's always this, oh my God, the practice is purchased. But, and it, you know what? Yeah, they do kind of fall apart, but the mom and pop have left home, right? Like, it's, you got to understand that's going to happen. Can the kids come together? Yeah. Like, it's still that practice, but it is missing that piece. It's different. And you have to expect that and understand that. But maybe it's going to be good. Maybe it won't.
And maybe it'll be better than it was before with a mom and pop. And then the kids become teenagers, go through the ups and downs that are, and then they become beautiful adults growing an amazing team.
I'm not saying like bad things can't happen, but you know, embrace the change and see what happens, I guess, is my thought, my advice to people going through a buyout.
Excellent. So then in that adage, then you then moved over from that location to a different location, a standalone building, beautiful building, again, still independent before it was bought out again. Tell us about that experience, because at that point, were you a manager as well as a tech working full shifts?
Yeah. So along the way, so we moved to another practice. The sheer size of the practice required us to get more bodies because we couldn't cover the square footage. Like for instance, I think we went from a 4,000 square foot hospital to a 30 or 40,000 square foot hospital.
I was going to call it 25, 30. Yep.
Yeah. So massive, two floors,
yep.
Completely different operations. We had to work differently. We couldn't see the reception area. We had no way to communicate with the front end. We didn't see what patients were coming in the front door. So we had to like just do a 180 and totally start over and recreate all of our protocols and how the flow of work went. So that was pretty stressful while at the same time throwing in new people who didn't have emergency experience. So
yeah,
exciting times. Yeah.
At a time that Edmonton's booming and you're getting way more clients through the door, people are recognizing specialty for what it is and wanting that additional care, which is a big deal. And I think in Canada, we were a little bit behind the trend of the US where that it was already taking place, but Edmonton's a perfect example where you saw, you know, this group saw a successful model and has taken it. Did you feel that you got to be part of that group making the processes, protocols, and you were really part of that team growing?
I felt I was, yeah. And I think because of that, I kind of have a loyalty to that hospital. Regardless of owners, the hospital itself, I feel very strongly that I belong there. This is my baby. I'm very, very, very defensive if someone says something about it. But, you know, yeah,
yep.
Very much. I think it's important for people to realize the benefits of being in a new hospital and putting a part of yourself into it.
That's it. And you make it what you want. And then 2014, 2015, you have another corporation that comes in and buys it out again. And so you have new owners, new responsibilities. What did that look like from a transition standpoint for Kate Simon in particular?
It didn't, you know, aside from calming everyone down because it's a corporation, honestly, it doesn't change how it operates in the hospital. Like our management team, as you know, is very tight. We're strong. We feel very strongly about our values and we stick to them. And I wouldn't want to be someone coming in trying to change it.
Yep, that's so true. And Mike and I were joking. Yeah, we're around. So just for all of our listeners, I was that person that had to come in a little bit later in the organization as regional operations director and help with the movement of change. And it was not an easy start for Kate and I would think. Kate is a very forward individual and, as she says, very defensive to her team. And we're having this conversation 3 years later now because there is a very large mutual respect between the two of us, I believe. And it takes a lot for a team to be successful, and you guys have a strong team. But when there's outside influences, it can go back and forth, and you're going to get some wins and losses on both ends. There's no doubt about it. It's the molding of those teams. I want to change the conversation a little bit back to techs. And I consider you a super tech, Kate, not only because of your education. I want to briefly talk on that because I think it's very important. I think this is something I've been educated through you and through the group over the last 2 years. You in 2017 went and took your designation exam and received your VTS, correct? In emergency and critical care.
Yeah.
Tell us what that is for all of our listeners, veterinarians, tech, anybody within the veterinary industry, what that means.
It means I have a certificate saying I'm an expert in emergency and critical care. And it took a lot of work to get it. So it's like 5,000 working hours, 60 hours of CE, maybe 40 hours of CE, letters of recommendation. You have to have specialists sign off that you've mastered skills like placing a central line, an ART line. I can interpret that information. what else? Those are kind of the big things.
Yep. And then you have to go write a big exam.
Huge exam. Yep. So the application has to get accepted and then you write the exam. So there's also case reports, case logs, like it's right. The application actually, I found much more difficult than the exam.
Okay.
And there's specialties and like 16 specialties. I think they mirror the American College of Diplomat, whatever they are. So there's like emergency and critical care would work with a criticalist and like you can get anesthesia and analgesia works with an anesthesiologist, too many big words. But yeah, there's 16 and all kinds of different things.
Fantastic. Yeah. And how many VTS designated technologists are there?
So in the world, there's 1,200 as of 2018. I looked this up for you. 2018, there's about 1,200 in the world. In Alberta, there's 10, and four of those are emergency and critical care.
Four of those emergency and critical care.
So out of 1,800 techs, 4 or 10 are specialists
in Alberta. Why would a technologist look to take that next jump in their career?
I think this is changed. This is a change, like a dynamic that's happening right now, right? It's becoming more popular and you're going to find that like the more there are, they'll quickly multiply, right? Cause I can mentor others now. Right. So it's going to change because there's so few of us, there's no like specific jobs unless you make one for yourself. But the reason I did it primarily was just self-satisfaction. Like I needed to know and I needed like verification that I know what I'm doing. And now, and not just people being nice, calling me a super tech or whatever, which I'm actually not technically very good due to my disorganization.
Well, your niche, you have a great niche and that's what you're into. Yep.
Yeah,
you know it.
The people I work with, they're amazing with those patients. Like that's not actually what I'm good at. So for me, self-satisfaction, there's assumptions of wage. There should be assumptions of wage, still work in progress.
Yeah. And I come in from the other side of that, looking at it. And when we sat down 2.5 years ago and looked, what does a VTS mean in Canada? We're still learning it. You know, you look at the low numbers of how many designate veterinary technologists there are in Canada. What kind of wage do we put to that? What increase in value is that to a practice? What's the ROI on it? What all of those pieces? I think we're still in the learning stages of developing and, you know, Kate and you and I, in our pre-recording, we even had that really good discussion. What does it mean to have a VTS technologist beside you in practice? How do you put a value to that?
100%. It makes you a better doctor. 100%.
Why?
You've got someone confident beside, like not supporting you. I'm beside you. I'm a partner in these cases.
Yes. What does that mean?
We're going to give better patient care. We're going to take care of our clients. We're going to be way more efficient. Like if you put me in a room with 4 brand new grad veterinarians in an emergency room, I guarantee I will triple how many patients they can see and they will feel good and confident about what they're doing.
Yeah. In what particular ways do you do that? Because you can triage those patients so quickly and get them to the right places. You can tell that vet where to go and have the best effect. What does that look like for Kate and your hospital? Well,
I think it's going to depend on the personalities you're working with, right? Like if you got someone who's like, oh, I got to look this up. You know, you've dealt with 10 block cats. We know what we're doing. You are good. You were good at this. And I think like just having someone there to back you up makes you feel good. And like I said, you feeling safe to ask questions. That's so important in people's progress.
Definitely. When you're chatting with either new techs or techs that are a few years into their careers and looking for what next steps possibly are within their careers, how do you talk to them about becoming possibly VTS?
Well, you got to want that. You really have to. You can't, like you suggested to me, you know, like how can I encourage people to do it? You can't. You can say this is out there, but you cannot help someone do it really unless they've shown interest and they are like, this is your life. You have to commit your life to it for like 3 years. You've got to want it very bad. I've known lots of people that have applied and they've quit in the middle of their application because it's intimidating. It's something that is very hard work.
And you need the right support system around you too, specifically from that. Oh, say that again. Sorry, I cut you off.
You're not going to do it just for a couple extra bucks an hour. It's not, which I think people think is a good idea. Like, I'll be a VTS so I can make $3 an hour more or whatever. That's unfortunately not how that's going to work.
Yeah, that definitely will not be the fulfilling part in the long term.
No.
Yep. Changing direction a little bit, tech shortages. We are at a point in our industry where we're spending money right now to find out what the shortage of veterinarians is within Alberta through a workforce study. CVMA, right. The Canadian Veterinary Medical Association, just came out with their report on shortages of veterinarians, and worldwide, we're talking about that. Tech shortages, we have different opinions on what that looks like. I consider there is a tech shortage out there. What is your perspective on shortage of techs, Kate?
Okay. I personally don't think there's a shortage. I think there's a number of people who have left for better things.
Yes.
The reason I say that is because if you look at Alberta, there's one vet college that graduates now 50 people every year. It takes 4 years to do that, right? So each tech college is going to graduate double that because it's half as long. So there's four tech colleges graduating like 30 to 40 people and a vet college graduating 50 people a year. But if you look at the ABVMA membership numbers, they're about the same.
Yeah.
So where are they? They've left because there's no point in staying. There's no benefit. It's actually a hardship to stay in this industry.
And we're in a good province for it, meaning that for all of our listeners that are outside of Alberta, techs are registered members of the Alberta Veterinary Medical Association. You cannot tech outside of having that designation. It's not possible in Alberta. And as a result of that, technologists get a better wage than in many other places in this world.
Absolutely. We get respect. We get a better wage. We have a voice in Alberta because we're a part of the ABVMA. Techs are on council. So like voting positions on council. So that's huge. I think in my opinion, and I'm biased, but Alberta definitely has an edge over most places, states and the rest of Canada.
Do you think that if other provinces had what the techs have in Alberta, we would have the same issue of a shortage? Because we even have a shortage in Alberta.
A lot of provinces have what we have. I should say that. Like Manitoba does, Saskatchewan does. But I don't think so, because I think why would they stay? Like I've been very lucky that opportunities come by, or I am pretty aggressive about grabbing these opportunities now, but not everyone's like that. So they make their wage, they have kids, they don't come back because they can't afford to pay for their childcare. So why work just to pay for childcare? It's just, why would they do that?
Yeah. So when because you're on multiple council groups and working groups that are tackling this challenge right now, what are some of the ideas that are being floated out there that you think are very relevant to 2020 and beyond?
So the ABVTA in 2018 put out a job satisfaction and wage survey. We had a 75% response rate out of all our members. Like, I've never heard of a survey having that many responses. So it's a touchy subject that we feel strongly about. And what came out of that was we need to work on sustainability. How can we keep people in here? Wage, I think, is going to be number one. But then you look at each practice and you're like, well, how are you utilizing these people? How are they going to afford to keep to pay these techs more? Like, how can they increase their revenue? And it's 100% about how to utilize an RBT properly.
Tell me what that means in your viewpoint, because I think different vets, different managers, different owners have different perspectives on what that means.
Right. And it is going to depend on each practice and what you want to get out of it. Right. Like I said, RBTs are going to make you a better doctor. They're going to increase your patient care. They're going to take care of your clients. By using an RBT properly, you could probably double how many clients and pets you see, thereby doubling your revenue, right? So each practice is going to be different how you use them. Obviously, in emergency medicine, we utilize them as the fullest. Like, I think our practice probably uses them as best as possible. And if there were more techs, we would hire more and change our operations and do more things.
Yep. Fully agree with that. From the standpoint of a living wage, what does that look like to Kate? Because I think I hit a hot spot in our pre-recording when I said living wage.
I hate that word.
I know you did.
So we're fighting for techs to have a living wage. So what's a living wage by definition? Like in Edmonton, it's like $16 an hour.
Yep.
We're fighting for people who have a two-year education, are part of a professional association, have a very, very specific skill set, write a national exam, and we're talking about $16 an hour. That's what we're fighting for. I think we can do better. Like these guys need to be able to have a mortgage. They need to be able to have a car payment. They won't need to be able to have put money away for whatever they want to do. Like it's
retirements. Cause we don't have pension funds. Like,
what am I going to do when I retire? Like I can't save money and to pay for a mortgage, or you can't save money to have a down payment on a house. Like there's no real reason to fight for a living wage. It needs to be better than that.
And sorry, Kate. So I'm just trying to clarify, you guys are fighting to get it to 16. What is currently like average?
No, we're not fighting for that. That's just the conversation. People say techs deserve a living wage. That's
Sorry.
Common conversation. Yeah. But I think we need to change our vocabulary because a living wage, I don't think is a living wage is someone without an education.
And for everybody that's listening, minimum wage in Alberta now is $15 an hour, which is one of the highest in Canada, which is much higher than many or most places in the US. And so we're already starting from a higher area or a higher place.
Right. And so the ABBTA now has released a wage survey, and that's kind of shedding a lot of light on wages. And there's a lot of variability in these wages. But I also think it's really important to notice that the utilization of these RVTs is different too, right? So we can't dictate to people how to use them. Whereas in the human world, nurses always do this and x-ray techs always do this. So they all get paid the same. In veterinary medicine, you know, you might have a tech sitting at a desk doing discharging clients and holding animals for the vet. Conversely, like I say, we have techs at our practice doing epidurals, inducing, calculating medications, running CRIs, managing a patient on a critical care ventilator. Like, obviously, those people shouldn't be paid the same wage. But what we should do is be learning how to utilize these techs so that they can benefit your patients and your practice, and being aware of what we can do, instilling confidence, teaching them to seek opportunities within the hospital to you know, what do you want to do? What's going to make you happy? You know, someone asked me when I was younger, like, well, we gotta stitch this dog up. What protocol do you want to use? And that was huge to me that someone would ask what I want to do, that they want my opinion. Like it's that easy to make your RVTs feel confident.
And that's a working relationship that builds over time. And that confidence measure, without a doubt, can occur, should occur, should be in place in all of our practices.
And it's a good way to test their knowledge set too. And like, I think you need to set your expectations. Like, I want you to be able to do this. I want you to know what these drugs do. And if you don't, then you need to take it on yourself to figure this out.
Ah, so that's that accountability piece. Let's jump there a little bit. I think you made that comment earlier that you do not like those that play the victim card.
No, I don't.
This is also a piece that's really important, because it's easy to brush off that responsibility and say, well, the vet's doing it all, the vet's taking care of it, so I'm just going to brush my hands of it.
Right. I can't.
We're paid for performance. We're paid for value, in my view. Not everybody believes or is on the same page as me. That's all right. But that's what you're describing right there.
I agree with that 100%.
So therefore, you're telling me that in being able to, as that perfect example, get medications ready, provide anesthetic protocols, that can come from a tech and can be useful to the doctor. Where does that accountability come from? How do we train that in so that both the veterinary allows the technologist to do that, but the second piece is that technologists can take it on by themselves? I don't know if that's through the college, if that's through an individual. My question's not structured that right. I just want to get your perspective on this, because accountability is a big part of this equation.
Right. And I think times are changing quickly, and I think a lot of things have to catch up. So we're members of the ABVMA. We're accountable, like legally accountable for our actions. You need to understand what you're doing and why and what these drugs do. That's what's happened. That is what happened with our legislation. The people out there that went to school like when I did, that was not taught to us that at all. That was, we just did pharmacology and like it was like hydromorphone is a pain medication. That was kind of the layer of information we got taught. So now I know the education systems are getting better about it, but I'm not sure if that level of responsibility is really
discussed and empowered.
I'm part of a mentorship group and someone made the comment, you know, I would have been a vet, but I didn't want the responsibility. You have more, like you have responsibility because you're doing it. You're doing what they're telling you to do. But if you screw that up, you're still responsible.
Yep.
Most definitely. I just think it's really important to know what you're doing, know why you're doing it, and see the value in that. And that's the value to the doctor, to yourself. You can then grow and help make changes too. Like if that didn't work, then maybe we should do this. So I think the critical thinking skills come along with that after that.
That's such a great point, Kate. And I'm just thinking about this on the fly. And Mike, I might put you on the spot, but I don't remember in 2009, 2008, when we graduated, we ever had one discussion in vet school related to the responsibilities of a tech beside us and accountabilities. That I don't remember that discussion ever happening.
No, I don't think I recall it either. And I'm just trying to think like through my career, the way that I worked with the techs that I worked with changed so much from like 2008, 2018. And when you are working with techs that want to be involved and want to take like charge and they can do so much. And it is as the veterinarian, you can see more cases and move faster and more efficiently. And it changed a lot just in that 10-year window.
Fully agree with you. Yep. No, that's great. That accountability piece and maybe the transition in education, it's something that that'll be nice to watch. And you're at the forefront there with all of the different groups you're with. It's interesting time as we continue down this road and the ability for techs to do more in practice as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Necessary. With that though, we need to make a transition as our time, as we thought it would, has flown by, Kate. And there's a couple other areas that we could definitely go into, but from a time perspective, we are short today. So with that, we are going to have to move to the impact round. And the impact round is a series of questions that we share with all of our guests. They can be short answers or as long as you'd like to go. And our first question for today, Kate, is, are you a cat or a dog person?
Cat.
There we go. Another one in the books on the cat side. Love it. I've got to change this up. True or false? I knew I wanted to be a technologist since I was a kid.
When I was a kid, that I don't think it really existed.
Yep. Any idea to becoming a vet or just wanted to be in the animal field?
That's the problem. I think the RVT profession isn't promoted enough, right? Like it's like, I want to grow up and work with, I want to be a vet. Cause that's kind of the only option in your head.
Yep.
So it probably was in my head, but I know I didn't want to be that.
Definitely. How would your friends describe what you do for a living?
They would say I was like an animal nurse.
Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
What's your favorite hobby?
I've got the COVID, so I'm not very good at sticking with things. I get bored. So I have a hobby for like a month and then I'm done with it. So with COVID and being trapped at home, I'm now a houseplant assassin.
Nice. Oh, so many things that I could go into there. What in this world are you most grateful for?
I knew that was going to come. I don't want to be cheesy, but like if it's related to my career, I still have to say my husband because he pretty much has single parented through a lot of this career of mine. So I'm going to go with him.
Awesome. Awesome. Kate, before we come to an end here, if people want to reach out, I think you have a huge amount of value to give to both the veterinary community, our listeners here. There's a lot more to come. And I think you being at the forefront and being an advocate for your profession and is fantastic. And there's a reason that I wanted to have you on this program, as there's a lot of mutual respect. And though we don't see eye to eye on everything, that is completely all right, because the respect is there. And I look forward to seeing, you know, where your career goes. And we sit on the same council and have a lot of good discussions together. Thank you very much for taking the time out of your COVID schedule to come here and join Mike and I. Very appreciated.
Anytime. It was actually really fun.
Excellent. That was the goal. If people want to reach out, have a conversation with Kate Simon, where's the best place that they should reach out to?
Facebook, I think, would probably be the easiest place.
Excellent. Search you out on Facebook. That's great. Yeah. Mike, any words of closing before I pass it over?
No, it was really fun, Kate. It was really nice to meet you. I really like the conversation. I like how passionate you are about your career and the industry and being an advocate, because I think that's really important, and I think it's really needed.
Excellent. So with that, the conversation ends with last words going to you. What message would you like to leave for the veterinary community?
I think it's really important to be self-aware and kind of recognize what your weaknesses are. And if you're in a situation you're not happy with, first look at yourself, but then change the situation. Don't stay there and be miserable. Just get out. It'll give you a bad taste for the industry when it's probably just where you're at.
Thank you for listening to the Veterinary Project Podcast. As a recap, on behalf of our hosts, the Veterinary Project Podcast will be releasing new episodes weekly. So be sure to tune in as we bring you more conversations aimed at helping you enjoy a life well lived. If you enjoyed what you heard on the show and you want to stay in the know, please like, love, and or subscribe to the podcast on the listening platform of your choosing, as we're available on all the usual suspects. If you know of others that may benefit from these conversations, we'd love it if you please share the show with them, as this will help us grow our community to reach more and more veterinary professionals. Speaking of which, if you are a veterinary professional and would like to get connected with more like-minded individuals who are joining us on this journey, please send an email to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com, and we'll invite you to be a part of our private Facebook group. General feedback, requests for information, or perhaps requests to be a guest on the show can also be sent to theveterinaryprojectpodcast@gmail.com. Dr. Michael Bug and Dr. Jonathan Light, thank you for listening to the show, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of the Veterinary Project Podcast. Bye for now.